Welcome to another edition of SB Nation Radio here on 106.7 The Fan with Mike Prada from Bullets Forever and the editor of SB Nation DC. I'm Scott Jackson, and it has been madness so far with March, Mike, and how you been enjoying the tournament thus far?
You know, I've been enjoying it, but it might be the first time where I almost have basketball overload.
Right.
One of our editors at SB Nation compared it to kind of the pizza bagel bites, where it's like, right, you know, they're nothing that incredible on their own, but a lot of them is kind of fun. So that's kind of how I feel about the tournament.
Do you feel like, too, the CBS thing now where you can watch all games at the same time, all four games on your own? I mean, I've always had that because I've always had the Mega March Madness package. But it is funny because I'm hearing people go, I don't know if I like it now that I had the choices. I liked it better when CBS told me who I was watching. I'm like, wait a minute. We were complaining for years that I wish I was the producer. Now that everybody is the producer, they can't handle the pressure all of a sudden.
I understand that, too. Like, I feel like I miss so much stuff the other day.
It's true. I mean, you got to be quick on the remote or watch one of those, you know, channels where they give you all four at once, which is even on big TVs kind of hard to watch.
Right.
But I do like the ability to just stick through a game, though. I do like that a lot. But yeah, I mean, you really have to monitor the scores, and that's what your laptop's for, and your cell phone, and, you know, to kind of keep your eye on what may be coming down to be a fantastic finish to hop around.
You should have seen my setup. I had one game on the TV, one game on the laptop, and then one game on the iPad. On the March Madness on Demand, and that was tough for me, you know.
Yeah, March Madness on Demand, by the way, is really far behind on the computer.
Yeah, see, that's sometimes the other thing. Yeah. That's the problem. But it is a good picture.
No, it is a very good picture. High quality stuff. Actually, I know somebody who works for that company. They do an awesome job. And look, it's fun. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of now sort of feel for the producers of CBS who had to make those calls over the years and pull people out of the games they cared about in their region to see the fantastic finishes. But obviously, good start to the tournament, so it has been enjoyable. And you know, I think a lot of people who look at it from the pro side, you know, as you do, and I did for many years, just think about, in particular, the Wizards situation, when you watch some of these guys and like, who could fit in with the Wizards? Mm-hmm. And what would you do if you had that number one pick? And I think it's kind of a fun thing to think about this time of year.
Absolutely. You know, and I think everybody says this year's draft class is down, but I'm not sure I really buy that. I think this draft class is better than people think. I think there's only maybe one superstar.
Yeah, I think that's why people say that. When you don't have like two to three, four guys that are like sure thing lottery stars, I think people start to tend to draft them down a little bit.
Yeah, but I think that they're almost, I see very few people in this top 10 that I just can't envision working out in the league at all. And I think a lot of these guys are you think about like someone like Al Horford, who's a very good player. I don't think you would call him like an all-star, but he's not like a superstar.
Sure.
I don't know if anyone's quite that good, but I feel like there are a lot of guys in this draft like him where you can say, yeah, that guy's one of my top three players. He might not be my best player, but he's one of my top three. And the Wizards need a guy like that because they have a best player. They just need someone that they can say is a real part of their future. And I think there are a lot of guys out there that could be that in this draft.
Guys that are going to be pros, and you don't have to worry about them busting out or you know, kicking them in the rear end to work hard yep. in the offseason and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, look, to me, for the Wizards scenario, it would be super, you know, if you could get one of the top, you know, three picks and pull yourself Harrison Barnes. To me, I think he would be a really intriguing guy because we talk about small forward issues with this team and athleticism at that position. A guy who has a huge ceiling at this point and has gotten better as the year's gone on. I look at him.
So you like Harrison Barnes?
I like Harrison Barnes a lot, yeah, and he's improved all year. And he had a lot of expectations, obviously. He didn't campaign to be a All-American, but he was made an All-American in the preseason and took a lot of heat throughout the year for not putting up numbers. And as the year's gone on, obviously he's steadied himself and been really strong. Had a great ACC tournament up till that last game against Duke.
Yeah, so here's my thing about Barnes. I like Harrison Barnes. I think he does a lot of things that people don't realize. Like, I think he's a complete player.
Very smart basketball player, yes. Yeah, high basketball IQ. Most Carolina kids end up coming out being high basketball IQ guys.
Yeah,
Duke as well.
I think he's a smart player. I think he's one of those guys where they looked at him as to be a dominant player, and I don't think he's ever going to be a dominant player.
Not in North Carolina's situation.
But I'm not really sure in the pros either. Like, I look at him with, like, the kind of the temperament that Rudy Gay had in college, where he kind of, everyone was like, oh, why does he defer so much? But really it's like, well, he's trying to do other things to help his team. And I think Gay kind of figured out how to use all his gifts this year.
I don't know if Gay ever hit as many game winners as this guy has, though. I mean, this guy's hit a lot of game winners, like where he's not even looked to pass. He never thought for a second to pass in that Florida State situation this year. And there's a couple others in the ACC where he's like, come on, get out of the way.
Right.
Clear out, and I'm taking over. And that's very NBA-like of him.
It is, but here's my problem. He's shooting only 5 free throws per 40 minutes. He doesn't get to the rim very much. And so what happens is that a good defender can kind of take that away.
Or he's not getting the calls at this point, too.
Well, see, from what I watch him, I think he's just not getting there. And
in the ACC tournament, he got to the rim a lot more than he had in the regular season, I think. And remember this, too, the ACC and the NCAA, I should say, in their ultimate wisdom, didn't put a no-charge circle.
Yeah.
and that takes away a few guys' opportunities at the rim that could be free throws instead of charges or flops that would be opportunities in the NBA, too. So.
Well, I look at a lot of the other guys at the top of this class. I look at someone like Derek Williams, who's shooting a lot more free throws, is getting into the lane a little bit more.
Sure.
He's
also a power forward, though, and Barnes is a small.
But I don't know if Williams can play the four in the NBA. But the point, I think what I'm trying to say is I like him, but I worry that, like, in the NBA, if you tell him, look, go get a bucket for us, he's not going to be able to create an efficient shot. So what he is, I think, is the kind of guy that can play off someone else.
Well, the joy of him is the fact that he's so young, and you can kind of mold him, kind of like, an Enes Kanter, too, if you like him from Kentucky. I mean, these guys you get as freshmen, I know some people see that as a negative, but the NBA guys are kind of like, okay, that's fewer years of bad habits. If we really believe in the guy, that's okay. We can, mold him into what we want him to be.
No, I absolutely agree with that. I would say that a lot of the guys in the top of this class are young. Sullinger's only 19. Derek Williams is only 19.
But I think, Sullinger's case, his athleticism is what it is. It's never going to get any better.
See, I disagree with you on that.
There's not the upside of these other guys. He's never going to be, a real Skywalker-type player, down there just, blocking shots and going crazy on the inside because of where he is athletically. I mean, I don't know if he's getting any taller. I mean, there is guys who do get taller, actually, believe it or not.
There are also guys that get in better shape. Because
there's no doubt they have to. The NBA is much tougher on your body than colleges.
And I think that's partially because they get on an NBA training program and they avoid all the college. I don't want to call them distractions because that demeans academics and all that stuff. But they're doing basketball 24/7 and then
academics. It's okay.
Okay, fair enough. Distractions.
Go for it.
And when they get in the NBA level, they have their training programs. They have they work with a personal trainer. They learn better technique. A good example I give, he's not an inside player, but I look at someone like James Harden a couple years ago, where in college, the big knock against him is like, oh, how athletic is this guy?
Right.
Can he get to the basket? I mean,
but then he had a good camp, though, where you could see the athleticism.
Right, because he spent time with on an NBA training regiment, and suddenly he's now a super athlete. And I think with Sullinger,
I still see the power forwards, though, that do that. You know what I mean? Either you got it, or either you're Blake Griffin or you're not. You know what I'm saying? This guy doesn't block any shots, Sullinger. I mean, he's not that kind of player.
No.
At all. And I don't know if he's
suddenly become that. He is hyper-efficient as an offensive player. And I mean that not just in how well he shoots, but also in how little he turns the ball over for a guy his position, his size, in the college game where there's so bad spacing. And he has the capability to step out and shoot, I think. He's going to have to improve that a little bit, but there's a lot of indicators that he can do that. The big problem with him is defensively, I think, is kind of a nightmare because he's a little slow. But I think that could be fixed a little bit with, some NBA training and stuff. He reminds me a lot of someone like Carlos Boozer.
He's going to be an interesting guy as they break him down because, as you say, he's ultra-efficient and he's done a lot of really good things. You can't knock him for that. But it's the upside part of it that, of course, is the good and the bad of the NBA, which sometimes proves out to be the ultimate failure or the ultimate success. I mean, I think about the year Dwight Howard and Emeka Okafor were in there, and nobody had seen Dwight Howard outside of the high school guys, and it's still impossible, no matter how great somebody is in high school, to say for sure. And everybody saw Okafor win a national title, and he's this great kid. He's graduating early. He's got everything going for him. And then, boom, the NBA people soured on him, and college people are, oh my God, these NBA guys are idiots. And then you also come to find out when they did the physicals, a few NBA teams, including the Wizards, flagged him because they knew that there were some genetic issues with him that, his back and that were scary things that came up. And certainly his knees have obviously gone too. He's had a lot of problems physically in the NBA.
I think it really, how Sellinger measures out at the combine.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Like his sit and reach, his body fat, those things are going to be very important. But until then, I just feel like I see very little way that he's not going to at least be a solid, productive player in the NBA because he can score and rebound. and he can do it efficiently, and he's only
19. I just don't know if he's a guy you would say, wow, I got a lot of value if I took him in the top five. Now, granted, you have to, you know, compare this draft versus other drafts, too. And I mean, compare it to this draft, not other drafts, excuse me, because you can only pick from what you have in front of you. Well, it is SB Nation Radio. Scott Jackson, Mike Prater here on 106.7 The Fan. Follow us on Facebook, by the way, or like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter at SB Nation Radio. I got a question for you about later round guys.
All right.
Kenneth Faried, who is the Dennis Rodman, if you will, of Morehead State. Obviously, they pulled off a huge upset. He's an interesting guy. People have been talking about him before this upset, obviously. Him at the next level is a guy, again, undersized, underweight, but has a knack for the ball. I mean, Kevin Love found the basketball, found him. He found the ball. We've seen what he's done to the NBA, although he didn't have ultra-super athleticism either. This guy's not as big as Kevin Love, but an interesting prospect, I think, if you're talking about the second round or the late first round.
I find it very hard to believe that Faried will not make it in some way in the NBA. Like, I don't. He's going to be a role player.
He's not going to bust out. Yeah.
There's no way he's going to bust out. He's too productive.
He works too hard.
He's the nation's leading rebounder. He has more career rebounds than Tim Duncan, which I think is kind of amazing, even when you account for his level of play. I mean, you saw the other day, he can clearly play with better players.
Yeah.
I look at him, I think he's probably going to be a small forward. He's a little small for power forward, and he doesn't have any semblance of an offensive game, so it really has to go to the right team that can value his skills.
He's the junkyard dog.
Right. I don't know if the Wizards are that team. You know, I think they kind of have that guy in Trevor Booker. I like Faried a lot. I think he's going to make the league. I don't know if I would pick him. I think the way I would look at it, and I know that, like, you know, it really depends on who's available when, but I think I would rather the Wizards go big early and then look for a wing later, because I feel like the wing position is a little easier to fill with what they need. Like, I think they just need a dude to stay in the corner, shoot threes, and play defense, you know, and inside I think is where they really need, you know, more bulk. And so I'm looking down there. I'm looking at someone like Jordan Hamilton. I'm thinking about someone like Jeff Taylor. You know, these guys might be maybe for the later picks. Even a backup point guard. I really like Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, yeah. He's fun to watch.
Really
he's
like
a difference
him.
Maker. Here's a scenario for you. Wizards, and I know this is ridiculous, and people are going to laugh out loud when they hear this. The Wizards win the lottery. I know.
Wait, let's get out of the way. Hold on 1 second.
All right. Yeah, exactly. Wizards win the lottery for the sake of this argument. They have the number one pick. Kyrie Irving's in the draft. And, of course, there'll be a lot of value with that pick if Kyrie Irving's in the draft. The Wizards obviously already have John Wall. Can you really have Kyrie Irving and John Wall? I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
Would you dare trade out?
I would.
Which you never see in the NBA. I mean, it rarely ever. I can't even think of the last time.
The last time it happened, I think, was 93, the Chris Webber draft.
Right, and on the very first pick. And I think you've had, you know, certainly you've had teams, you know, like the Chicago swap, obviously, with the Clippers, you know, back with the Kwame Brown draft. You have stuff like that towards the top, but you never have somebody who's given up the number one pick, usually, because there's usually a number one guy. But it is an interesting scenario for the Wizards. What would the value be to give up that pick? What would it take for you to hand over that pick to somebody?
At the very least, two lottery picks, I think. I think if Cleveland, who has two lottery picks, and I don't know, they have theirs and the Clippers. The Clippers right now are at number 8. Mm-hmm. So if Cleveland were to lose a lottery, that would be anywhere from 2 to 4 for their pick, assuming that you know they continue to be the worst team in the league, which is a fair assumption. That'd be either from 2 to 4 and then 8. You know, I would think about that, where you could do that. You could get Solinger, Barnes, maybe Derek Williams, who I really like a lot. Yeah, and then you can make, or Cantor, who I think is interesting, and then you can move down and maybe get a small forward. I don't really like Terrence Jones or Perry Jones, but those guys will probably be there. Maybe even the guy from Europe, Jan Vesely, who is very highly regarded. If you can do that, then you might be able to get two guys that you can count on going forward. And this is one reason I like Solinger. I just feel like the Wizards need someone they can just count on. You know,
that's true.
Someone that doesn't need a lot of kind of development in him.
Yes.
Someone who has these skills and you know what they're doing. Because
he has post skills. They don't have anybody with post skills.
Right, and they don't have anyone with, I mean, other than Wall, they don't really have anyone that they can say, I know what I'm getting from this guy.
True.
And I don't think you can, even with Barnes, and I like Barnes a lot, but even with him, there are a lot of questions about, can he get to the rim at the next level? Is he going to get stronger? Because I think strength is an issue with him.
Well, he would have been the first pick had he, in, well, of course, if Irving, him or Irving, depending on if both of them would have been there, he would have been one of the top picks last year, too. I mean, if there was no one and done rule.
Right.
You know,
I think a lot of things, see, we can go back to Barnes now for a bit. I think a lot of things, there are a lot of limitations, I think, of Barnes as a super duper duper star that I think got exposed this year. And the one thing, One of the big reasons I think he's playing a lot better now is because of Marshall being in the starting lineup, taking away some of the playmaking and letting him do
scoring. Still has to make shots. I mean, he was still getting the same shots he's getting now that he's actually making, and he's hitting last-second shots. And as great as Marshall is, he's still very erratic.
But I think Marshall gets him the ball in better spots. I think it's like a rhythm thing, I think, sometimes.
Well, they push the ball better, there's no doubt. They're at a different speed going up the court, mm-hmm. which suits Barnes, which is why I actually think he's a better NBA player than he is college player. But I don't know. Look, Barnes is awful good. And you know, he's got a lot of, like I said, a lot of the mental stuff you like too, because he didn't let all this struggles, you know, bring him down and didn't get caught up in that. He didn't quit the team.
Right.
Or anything like that. But anyway, we're going to talk Terps here in a minute. They get a big score in the prospect front. We'll get to that. Eric Prisbell, Washington Post Terps reporter, College Hoops man, will be with us coming up. It is SB Nation Radio. Scott Jackson, Mike Prater here on 106.7 The Fan.